Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And as always, I'm here with Mr. Casey Clapp.
It's a good day to you, Alex.
A good day, Casey. A very hot day here in Portland.
Oh, yeah. And probably everyone in the Southwest is like, tell me about it, assholes.
Yeah. We're hitting 105 today,
I heard yesterday was 105.
Okay, yeah. Today's 101, I think.
Okay, yeah. So either way, it's just hot as hell.
Yep. And we aren't going to take it anymore, as they say.
You know what? Also, I noticed it's just, there's so much like haze in the air.
Yeah.
It's just so bad. Like I drove out of where I was because I'm living much further away. Normally I ride my bike here, as most people know.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to pick up a bunch of stuff and do a bunch of things. So fortunately I had to drive, and God, it was just filled with haze out there. Ugh. And every time that happens, like, yeah, it's nice to be in the air conditioning, but I'm also like, air conditioning is causing this problem.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's the tool we have, unfortunately.
It is. It's the tool we have. And honestly, it's not air conditioning. That is just, I don't even want to remotely say that. It's energy just like anything else. But yeah, there's a lot of other stuff that probably way more exacerbating the problem than just people using air conditioning.
I mean, it's air conditioning or death at this point, Casey.
It really
so,
is, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So and that is more true than most people probably wish to admit.
Yeah, it's I meant it literally.
Yeah, right.
Casey, anyway, woof. We can talk about that some other time.
We sure can. Everything is cool.
Everything's cool. Great. Casey, I wanted to say, to give our Fungal Associates a little update.
Mm-hmm.
on some t-shirts that they may have pre-ordered last month.
Is that like a t-shirt you're wearing right now?
Oh my God. I literally did not even realize that I was wearing this t-shirt. No.
Oh man, I noticed it and I was just like, hell yeah.
But here it is on my body.
Looks good.
I'm wearing the sample of the t-shirt that we got. This is our Tree Buds t-shirt.
Yep.
It's an illustration done by Tori Gorham of two little tree friends. I imagine they have some sort of budding... romantical situation going on.
Yeah, it does look like that, right?
They could be platonic friends.
Yeah. But how many platonic friends sit so close to each other in a glade of beautiful trees?
I know.
Sharing their ear pods.
And they're kind of like sitting on their knees. You know, they're like ready for action. Mm-hmm. They're ready to spring onto each other.
It looks like one of their hands is about to touch the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so we ordered, we placed the order last month of these t-shirts. And I got noticed today, and we're recording this a couple days before it comes out.
Yeah.
So by the time you hear this,
they'll be in our hot little hands.
That we will have picked them up and are ready to ship. We're probably already shipping them as we speak.
Exactly. So as you hear this, that is your sign to check your mailbox in a couple days.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be on their way.
That's right. I love this shirt, Casey. You know, you never know when you come up with a piece of merch.
Yeah.
I forgot, by the way, that I came up with this idea for this art itself.
Yeah, you did. Tori reached out to us originally and was like, I'd love to collaborate with you guys. And we saw one of their pieces. And then you basically said, now what if they were both sharing the earbuds, these two characters that Tori drew? And
Oh, that's right. Did she? Oh, yeah. Okay.
She gave us like a nice big long spread of like, here are a couple of my ideas.
Wow, Tori's so awesome.
Yeah, so any of you other budding artists out there who want to, I don't know, give us merch, or rather, I guess, draw merch.
Let us steal your idea?
Yes, we're going to take your idea, we're going to call it our own. send us what you got. This is actually how you get a lot of the Cone of the Month Club as well, isn't it?
It's true. I don't go seeking for Cone of the Month Club artists much anymore.
Yeah.
But they're coming to us, Casey.
Yes.
It's a good sign.
Not to give too much away, but this month, Alex, do you want to share something special?
Well, I have been drawing a lot on my iPad on Procreate. I used to love drawing as a child.
Procreate. That's so good.
And I have been kind of reliving a little bit of that. And Casey, we have decided that this month, the Cone of the Month Club cone, it's hard to say, will be drawn by me.
Alex Croson, the Alex Croson, multimedia artist extraordinaire.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be great. You got audio, you got other kinds of audio, now you got visual, now you got another kind of visual, and you have a third. You can do anything is what I'm saying, Alex.
The problem with being pretty good at a lot of things is that you're not great at one thing.
Not quite a Renaissance man. You're more just late Middle Ages man.
I'm just like shitting in the street and eating rotten meat covered in cinnamon.
Exactly. But you know what? You're doing it just okay in every regard.
Oh, late Middle Ages. Oh, geez.
That's really exciting, Alex.
Thanks, Casey. Yeah. I'm excited to draw it. And we're actually tonight, I think, on our live stream, which will have happened by the time you hear this
exactly.
as well. We'll be selecting and sketching some cones for me to draw.
Yeah. So we're going to go through them. Alex is going to be doing a little bit of artistry at the moment. But I think we'll also
I'm terrified.
Be, you are? Are you really?
I'm a little nervous. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a good drawer.
You are a good performer.
Sure. Once you are friends with really, really good artists, it's hard to say, yeah, I know how to draw.
Yeah.
When I'm like friends with Leanne Flug.
You know? Yeah.
She ever heard me say that?
That's fair. I was going to say, I think if Leanne heard you say that, Leanne would be like, no, you're a great artist.
Right.
Like, don't worry about it.
She'd be very encouraging.
Yes, yes, yes.
But anyway.
Well, yeah, you're going to be doing that. And just to dovetail, if you have reached out to us, we're sorry if we haven't gone back to you. If you want to, send us anything. This is how we really love to get people who are passionate about it, listeners to the show, and we'd like to show off your work. So if you want to be a part of the Cone of the Month Club, go to Patreon and sign up. If you want to perhaps be a Cone of the Month Club artist, send us a quick line.
Yeah.
Convince me that you can draw a cone that I would look at and be like, yeah, that's a sick ass cone.
Just know that when we go over these, Casey is sitting in his big leather bound chair.
Mm-hmm.
He's stroking his goatee.
Glasses down to the tip of my nose. Looking at reference books all over.
And he only does one of two things. He either nods, which is a yes, he likes it, or he says, next.
Exactly. So anyway, just put yourself out there.
Yeah, please. And we'll judge you mercilessly.
We'll judge you the way that no one wants to be judged.
That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Casey.
Alex Croson, we're not here to talk about this.
No, we've got a very lonely, sad tree to talk about today. What's up?
Very true. We do get to talk about a cone, though, which is great.
Because it's a conifer we're talking about today. That's right. Maybe a future cone of the month, Casey.
Oh.
How would that be?
Hey, sounds good. Draw a nice little circle.
Well,
it's elongated. You're right.
Hey, don't bury the lead now. Or the opposite of bury the lead.
Don't expose it.
Don't expose the lead.
Yeah.
We've got to take a short break, but right after that, we are getting into this week's treat, the Sahara Cypress.
Buckle up.
Wow.
Like, seriously, go get it. Go whatever you need to calm yourself down, go get it, because this is going to be a wild ride.
And with that, we'll be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
She's incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About, out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the Sahara cypress.
That's right.
Scientific name.
You got this? Did you look it up?
I could certainly try, Casey.
All right. This one should be fun. It's actually one of those that looks more complicated than it actually is.
Well, let's see here. This is the Cupressus.
Yeah.
Dupreziana.
It's great. It's named after this guy, Captain Duprez, who is a French dude who found this tree. Now, he is the first European to notice this tree.
Thank you for making that correction.
It usually is the case, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a given, huh?
It really is in most instances. And so
whenever we say they discovered it, it's like, well,
yeah,
they brought it back to the Royal Society.
Exactly. And then they published it, and now everyone says, well, that's science. They're the first ones to actually account for it. It's like, well, sure, but you just didn't ask those other people.
Isn't it crazy, the system we've built?
It is. Honestly, I think it's crazier to like see that that is just like this minute little crust of like the actuality of who knows about trees, you know? And I guess when I mean crust, everyone says, well, here's science. We're the first ones to discover this. But then if you just look below the crust, you find out that no, there's like this gigantic layer of information that people have had about this tree for so long. They just didn't approach it in the same way, I guess.
A millennia long relationship that just wasn't published in European papers.
Exactly. Yeah. Because most of the time, you know, Europeans hadn't even really been down there. I mean, sure, you'd have the Romans and then the people after the Romans and all this, like this has been a part of the world, the Northern Sahara.
Yeah. That's where we are. North Africa.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is, it's a part of the world where people have been for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. I was actually looking through the history of the Sahara Desert, and it was, I think, like the earliest people were found there, like this one kind of culture, was like 8,000 years ago.
Wow.
So it's been inhabited by people for a long time, but funny enough, it's actually come and gone. So some people have been there for a really long time, and then other people have left for like a couple thousand years before they then found evidence of another culture, completely different. And it turns out some of them may have been like coming from South Africa into the Sahara Desert, and then they disappeared. And then people came from Europe down into this area. And you know how they could tell?
How?
One was
like, who was who?
Yeah, yeah. One was significantly shorter. Like one, the first people were like over 6 feet, and they were like these intense hunter-gatherers and like did all sorts of things with all the other animals that lived in the Sahara at the time.
From Africa.
Because they also looked through and said, yes, these people had dark skin, and I don't know how they can tell this, but they told it somehow. But these are also like a little bit later. And then the next people they found were significantly shorter. And it was like, so the first people, 10,000 to 8,000 years ago, they're called the Kiffians.
Kiffian.
They certainly knew about our tree.
Interesting.
And then they ended up having this, you know, let's say the people came, they went. Now you have some people that live there now. And those people call this the Tarot.
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 Not tarot.
Not tarot. I believe I looked this up, but it was very hard to find it. But there's also an island in the Arabian Gulf, that's called the Tarot Island. I'm not sure. But it appears it's pronounced Tarot, spelled T-A-R-O-U-T.
Okay. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are taking a little trip to Algeria.
Let's do it.
And we come across, of course, some Tarot trees. Would you say Tarot trees or just say that some Tarot?
Well, I think technically we'd say Tarot.
Okay. We come across some Tarot. Casey, let's ID this tree.
That sounds great. Alex, have you ever seen a windpipe?
Casey's pulling his shirt down to expose his cleavage.
Nope, I'm sorry. Excuse me, Alex. My eyes are up here, sir. I was remembering trachea. Isn't that the term for the wind? You have your esophagus.
Esophagus is food. Trachea is your air.
Is your air.
I think so.
So your windpipe, your trachea,
is
connected to your lungs.
I have heard this.
Yes. Okay. Now, imagine that you flip that upside down.
Okay.
That's what this tree looks like.
Oh, like a pipe with two kidneys growing off the side.
Yeah, or probably more accurately described as lungs.
Let me try. Let me try improving upon your analogy here.
You really did a good job. Yes, it's actually
interesting. I have to look at a picture, Casey.
Yes, so give a picture. Now, you're not going to necessarily see this as 100% the case, but to rot is actually a Tamashek word that means it's the windpipe and the lungs of a grazing animal.
Oh my God.
So that's what it looks like. It's a butcher's term, and they describe it because this tree kind of grows up, sends out branches that come up, but then some of the branches also kind of go down a little bit.
Wow.
But people would go underneath these trees for millennia, and some of it would get eaten by goats, and some of it would be kind of pruned off for firewood, whatever someone can reach. So a lot of them kind of develop this one central stem that then has these two big kind of poof things that come off on the side.
Yeah.
And then two or three are like some amount of bigger, kind of bushier canopies, I guess, growing up with kind of a middle that is sometimes a little bit like pyramidal and then sometimes just not.
That's a great visual analogy. I mean,
Isn't it fun from
the etymology of the word. That's fantastic.
Exactly. So that's their term for it.
That's wonderful, Casey. What did you say the indigenous group?
This is the language of the people that live there. It is Tamashek.
Tamashek is the language.
Tamashek.
And Tarot is a butcher's term.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, in this language. And I don't know, when this initially came. I don't know how old the term is. Mm-hmm. I don't know how old these necessarily people are, where this exact language kind of came from.
Okay.
But it's come back and forth. There's been a lot of people who've lived in this area. But the other thing that, just as a quick, how are we discussing these trees? This is going to come up a little bit later, but this tree is such an isolated population of trees.
Yeah.
And each population individually, like each small group of trees, is also so isolated. Sometimes it's just one tree right over there.
Wow.
They name these trees individually.
Oh my God.
That is how few there are and how separated they are, that you can look at it and be like, oh, that tree is one instance. Oh, that's the one by the flat stones.
That is that's dire if you really look at it.
Yes, and we'll talk a little bit about it. But I think that's such a fun thing, where each tree has a name. It also sometimes has a name for people who are going by. I read that sometimes travelers would like set their stuff in a tree and then like leave for sometimes years at a time and then come back and their stuff would still be there. So that name of this tree, be like, oh yeah, well that's Joe's tree over there. Yeah, Joe's had his stuff there for like 5 years. So, go by Joe's tree and then take a right, and then that'll take you down over here.
And they know where to find it again because it's the only tree within miles.
Exactly. When they did this, and I'll give it away, there's 231 of these trees.
That's so crazy.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. They counted a couple years ago. I think it's probably a couple decades now. And they had 233. And then when they recounted, the most recent stuff I found, I think in like 2008, is saying there are 231 trees.
Wow.
So two of them have perished.
Oh my gosh.
I think I remember reading that one got backed over by a truck. And so now it's gone.
How tragic.
It's pretty tragic.
Casey, besides the sort of very curious, unique morphology.
Yeah.
Of this thing, it does look like a cypress.
I'm so happy you said that. Because when I look at it, I think to myself, this doesn't look like a special tree. This looks like a cypress.
Yeah, it's.
Like,
I mean, it's very juniper-esque to
me. Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is,
totally.
Of course, in the cypress family.
And they are those are sister groups. Mm-hmm. The junipers and cypress are very, very closely related.
And juniper are in Cupersaceae.
They are. Okay. Yes, yeah. Exactly. In that family. But so generally, it's a tree that has like this pyramidal shape. Mm-hmm. Right? The pyramidal shape grows up, and it has a kind of feathery green but very dense canopy.
Beautiful.
And it tends to send up branches all along the side. So you get, instead of having one pyramidal tree, which it starts out as a young tree, it tends to develop multiple main stems as it grows up. Hmm. And they also live for something like 2,000 years. I think the oldest one
Holy
is dated
shit.
As 2,200 years.
Woo!
So, you know, you're going to have a tree that looks pretty fucked up by that time. It's not going to maintain its perfect triangular form.
Sure.
2,000 years, a lot happens in that amount of time.
It's been through the ringer. I mean, that's kind of a classic thing, like with the bristlecone pine.
Yes, they just, exactly.
You can see the history in their shape.
And that's what makes it beautiful, right?
Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah. And then take on top of that, that these are trees that grow out in kind of these highlands. It's in an area that's called the Tassili Niger Massif.
Hmm.
And a massif is like a big geological feature that just kind of comes up out of nowhere.
Okay.
Most of the time it's like you imagine a crust section that just kind of goes and goes up. So it's almost like this big vertical kind of cliff.
I'm imagining like a mesa?
Yeah, kind of like a mesa. Okay. But a mesa, I think, usually is like there's sides to it, and it's one big round thing, kind of like a flat top butte or something.
Uh-huh.
This is like that, but it's like 75 miles long, but not very wide.
Interesting.
So it just is this nice strip. So as you're walking, there's no other trees. You're literally smack dab in the center of the Sahara Desert.
Wow.
In southeastern Algeria.
Now, the Sahara isn't like, the Sahara is like a grassland, right?
No.
It is a desert. But
it is the biggest hot desert in the world.
A hot desert.
Yes.
And that means like just sand for miles.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, what am I thinking of, Casey?
You might
the
just
Serengeti.
Be thinking of. Yes, exactly. So it's like a grassland that is, just has not a lot of water, not enough water for trees, but enough water that grasses grow, or maybe like the plains in southern Africa where there's like a tree here, a tree there.
Your umbrella thorns.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So
the Sahara is straight up sand dunes.
Rocks.
Don't go out there. You're going to fucking die.
Exactly. Now, I believe it's not 100% just sand dunes in the traditional, like go to the beach, there's sand dunes.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bunch of giant sand dunes in this area, but much of it's also just blanket rock, just like you just walk down into, say, Southern California. They don't have necessarily dunes in their deserts. They just have sporadic, very low plants, big rocks, and then just giant spaces of very few things other than rock and sand, because a lot of it gets blown away and kind of eroded. So you just get this big, like, arid nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I know at a macro, this tree looks very cypress-like.
Mm-hmm.
Does it also have cypress-like micro elements?
All the micro elements. I tell you what, dude.
All right, Trump.
This is... it is. It does. Nothing about this tree is like extraordinary in terms of exactly what it looks like. It looks like a cypress.
Right.
It's got the same kind of leaves that are the... In fact, they're described as cuprosoid leaves.
Wow.
So literally, it's a cypress that has cypress-like leaves.
That's so funny.
A little bit like roll your eyes, you know?
Well,
I guess if it's so good of a description, what do you, are you the kind of person that would define something using the thing itself?
Sometimes.
Like, oh, what's a tree? It's something that's tree-like?
Probably not. I mean, I might make myself laugh by doing that.
Okay, yeah, that's
but,
fair.
But not if I'm actually trying to describe
You're
something.
You're trying to do that? Okay.
Okay, yeah, so cypress-like
yes.
needles.
So what does that mean?
Which are very evocative.
Right? Yeah. They are oppositely arranged along a stem.
Okay.
And they have they're very oppressed to the twigs. So
right.
they look like these scales going down, just like most other cypresses. In fact, the not juvenile, but the adult in the kind of later growth on a juniper, looks exactly the same.
Okay.
So they're pressed and then they overlap. So you have two on the left and right, then you have two on the top and bottom.
It's called imbricate.
Exactly. You are so good.
That's a callback to a discussion we had before we started recording.
So good. Yes, they are imbricate and decussate, which means they form kind of a plus. If you look down, if you look at it from kind of the end, it looks like it goes, there's one here and there's one there, one there, one there.
What was that word?
Decussate.
Decussate.
Yeah. So essentially, if you look at it from the very tip down the twig, it looks like a plus sign.
Cool.
But because they're so oppressed, it's really hard to see that.
Sure.
You know? But the splays of foliage themselves are very flat. They go off in one plane.
Mm-hmm.
Which is important because that is in contrast to the Italian or the Mediterranean cypress, a very closely related species.
Which are not flat.
Yes, they come off in kind of all directions.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. So this is almost more like a fir branch or something.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's perfect.
Cool.
But then, of course, they have a little teeny tiny gland that puts out a little bit of resin, but that's at the very base of the leaf, which is covered up by the leaf behind it.
Oh my God.
So you can actually only see it if like it's dead and the other leaves kind of fall away.
Must be quite small. What is the resin for, to keep stuff out?
It's just kind of a thing that many cypresses have, also many junipers, where it just has a little bit of a resin gland that just puts out a little resin. Not really sure what it does.
Interesting.
You might call in some insects to come do something. It might make it smell better, but also might just be a defense for some reason.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, there's a third option, D, which is none of the above. Well, D is really...
Is the fourth option.
D is just D, man. If you have to ask, you shouldn't know. D is like, it's an anachronism.
Yeah, it come from something else, right?
Yeah, it doesn't even matter anymore. It just, that's the way it is.
It's just the way it grows.
But at some point in the last million years.
Yeah. You know. Honestly, that's something I should look up and look into, is figure out if there's a reason for it. If there is some ecological anachronism there, because I don't technically know.
That's what a good rip roaring Friday night for you, Casey.
Isn't it?
Researching cypress sap ducks.
Yeah, you know what? This is my life, isn't it? You're right. You're right.
I love you, Case.
Thanks, Alex. I love you too.
One thing I really love also is the bark of any cypress or cedar or false cedar.
Have you looked up the bark of this one?
Yes.
It's stunning.
It is like pure distilled cypress bark.
That is such a good descriptor. It's like fibrous. It's orange. It has like these big furrows that come into it.
Yeah.
It is just, it's super gorgeous. And it plays, in my opinion, to the desertness of this whole section. Because if you go down to the southwest, it has like this certain color palette, you know?
Yeah.
The trees, the grasses that are growing there, this kind of like okra color over here, ochre maybe, I guess is how you pronounce it.
You got sage green.
Exactly.
Kind of gray purple. Gray.
Yeah, exactly. With like this kind of off yellow often.
Mm.
All those things still play for this desert.
I love it.
They are both deserts. They, for whatever reason, have converged on these different techniques. In fact, many times it's the same species of tree growing there. Many times in the Southwest, you get the Arizona cypress, for example. In California, there's like 10 different cypress species all growing these weird arid areas. So this tree does the same thing. And of course, it's a goddamn conifer. So it's got all these beautiful little cones that grow on it. And those little cones are just slightly smaller than the Mediterranean or Italian cypress.
Okay.
And a little bit more elongated. So they're kind of more of a smaller oval than a bigger, more circle-like.
I see that. Does Interesting. That
sense? Yeah.
They're almost cylindrical in a way.
They are. They look very much like that, don't they? Which is kind of weird. They have like apparently 12 to 19 scales, which doesn't make any sense because their scales are paired.
Oh, whoa.
So why do they have 19?
How are there 19?
Exactly. And I looked.
Where's that last scale?
It might be that they kind of mistyped and it meant to be 12 to 19 pairs of scales.
That seems like too many.
That seems like way too many.
It seems like they have maybe 5 or 6 pairs.
Yes. That is what I think, which would be 10 to 12. So this would be 6 to 10 pairs of scales.
You know why?
Yeah, why?
If you buy 18 scales, you get one free.
Okay, I see. All right. This makes so much sense. Why didn't I think of that, Alex?
So dumb.
No. That is good, brilliant comedy. No one's going to take that away from
me. Oh, yeah. It's a best of moment, of course.
We're going to make a best of, and it's just going to be a bunch of our jokes, and people are going to laugh, and that's going to be in there.
3 hours of silence. White noise.
Yeah, well, there's going to be some ads in there, just to be clear.
Oh, my God. We have to make this happen.
Oh, that'd be so good. You hear Wolfpack did that some years ago?
Yes.
So good. What did they call it? It was like Sleepify was the name of the album?
Yeah, something like that.
It was just silent, and it made like $20,000.
Yep.
That was just so good.
They did it as a protest to Spotify's payouts.
Exactly. And then they did an entire tour, but made it 100% free.
Yep.
Or like very discounted tickets. Yeah. God, brilliant.
Brilliant.
So the funny thing about this is that their cones have seeds in it. And usually there's a couple seeds. I know it's a thing that you don't normally see. But this cone in this tree does things differently, so you expect it.
Sure.
But they generally only have about 10% are viable embryos. So for every seed, rather, I guess, one in every 10 seeds is going to be viable.
And the rest are inert?
The rest are just infertile. And
interesting.
There's some people who've studied this because this tree caught fire in a metaphorical sense.
Oh, thank God.
In a, what is it, a figurative sense.
Yes.
A couple decades ago. And so people kind of turned their heads and were like, I'm sorry, what? And like really started getting into it. Because first off, we should know, this tree grows in this really wild, like Sahara Desert area. There's no other trees that are close. A couple thousand years ago, the Sahara Desert was going in like different phases. So it has these big cycles.
Hmm.
So at one point, there was probably a forest of these cypress trees growing around the kind of the entire Mediterranean, growing up on the north side in kind of Europe and Greece, in the Italian peninsula, Croatia, those kinds of places. Then you also had some in Spain. You had a bunch in the Atlas Mountains, and then all the way on this northern Africa kind of section. So this area over time has gone through these cycles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the tree itself is gone through these cycles with it. Remember, the oldest one is like 2,200 years.
Right.
So it's lived. I mean, that would go through while Rome was battling Carthage, which was this place in North Africa.
Mm.
So these people and the peoples before this have been working with this tree for a long time. But they would go and cut them down and use them for wood. Great wood. Like aromatic. It was very strong. It was beautiful. You can go get this tree. It grows very slowly, so it's very hard, and it's very very tough wood, not decay, very decay resistant kind of thing.
Okay. They'd use it for all sorts of stuff?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. Okay. In fact, still today, immigrants and migrants from southern Africa that go up through, like, say, Libya to try to get to Europe, they often will still break off bits of these trees and use them for firewood when it gets too cold in this desert.
Sounds like a good firewood.
It's a great firewood, which sucks because there are now 231 individuals
left. More. No more firewood.
Yeah, and so because it only has this 10% seed germination, we have seen literally two documented cases of this tree actually reproducing and regenerating itself.
That's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah. And this also has to do with desertification of the Sahara Desert.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time that desertification comes in.
It totally is.
Suddenly there's a bougie, trendy salon that cuts men's hair, and there's the puzzle shop. And
what do you mean desertification?
The natural wine shop.
Where the hell are you coming up with this? Is this like the desert becomes Palm Springs or something?
I'm using desertification. I'm pretending that I'm confusing it for gentrification.
Oh, God. Okay. I did not get that. I thought you were just like, everyone loves to live in the desert, so this is going to become quite fashionable here pretty soon, don't worry.
Yeah.
Yes, well, this is apparently, yes, that is exactly it.
It's sometimes better when stuff doesn't land. I really relish it. It's fun.
It takes me so long sometimes. I'm like, what is he? Usually I can put it together. It's not your fault, Alex. Man. This is. Yeah, I'm gonna take half credit for this. Anyway. So there's natural cycles, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then there's also people coming in, and people have, I don't want to say decimated, but over a long period of time, because there's not a high caring capacity in this area. And most people
caring capacity?
Yeah. It's how many organisms or how much production can a piece of land produce, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How much can it support?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So in this area, this tree is, for all these different reasons, people cutting it down. It's a very arid space to begin with. It's also going through natural cycles where it's about the same dryness today as it was about 13,000 years ago.
Oh, geez.
So all these things come together to put this tree in a really precarious situation.
Yuff.
So this precarious situation is that the trees are not only their whole population is extremely remote. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a quick idea of how remote it is.
Okay.
The whole space that every single one of these trees naturally exists in today is 75 miles long and between 4 and 10 miles wide.
Oh my gosh.
That is it.
Say that one more time, Casey. This is the endemism. Oh.
Yeah, you got it.
Endemicism?
Yeah.
Endemicism.
Yes.
Endemic. We need that C.
Ism. Yes. Endemicism.
Endemicism, yeah. Of the Sahara cypress.
Yes.
Now, this is the entire population?
This is the entire natural population. It's within 75-mile long space by 4 to 10 miles wide.
That's absurd.
Yeah. If you go to one of our links, it's conifers.org. It goes straight to this, and they have a little map. And you look at this map, and you just keep expanding out. And it's just this tiny little group of trees in the, dead center of the Sahara Desert. And that's it.
Wow. I'm stunned.
Yeah, you want a little bit more to add to that?
Hit me.
There are, again, 231 individuals.
Wow.
Each one of those is within 46 different sites within this area, and they're all spread out.
Okay, and there are 46 sites. Period.
Yes.
Okay.
And those trees no longer are close enough to each other that they can pollinate each other because they're wind pollinated.
I think you'd have to be.
Exactly. But they're still so far away from each other that the odds of a single pollen grain from tree A to individual B that is not within its, group of however many species.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we can quickly do the math here. And what is 46? I'm sorry, 231 divided by 46.
That is 5.02.
Okay.
So five.
So on average, there's five individuals in each one of these individual sites.
Wow.
So here's where this tree blew my mind. You read down into, I was expecting just to say, yeah, let's talk about desertification and why this tree is kind of in a tight spot. This tree is in a tight spot and decided to do something so astronomically wild, it blows my shit.
Oh my God.
And I've literally written down here,
okay, your
holy shit, this tree's incredible.
Wow, I saw that, Casey.
Yeah. So here's the thing, Alex. This tree goes through this process called apomixis.
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 That's my favorite Pokemon.
Oh, it is. Oh, really? It's I think you're going to come to regret that. Well, maybe not, because I guess I should be more specific. It does paternal apomixis.
That was a joke, by the way.
I know. Alex is like, yeah, I love it when men take over everything.
What?
You motherfucker.
The Pokemon thing was a joke.
Yeah, I know. All right, that's fair. All right.
You reacted like it was real.
I know. It's because I was trying to catch in a spot before we move on to the next thing, and everyone's like, Alex really liked that? So this is gonna
Oh shit. Well, that went over my head, Casey.
Yes. Today all we're doing is just shooting across each other's bows and not hitting anything.
This is like in ancient Greece when like a common sport was for young men to like outwit each other with their words. It's like rap battles. Did you know about this?
No, I didn't. I had no idea.
It was like a kind of a hobby among young scholars. you'd kind of have like rap battles and you would try to rhyme and insult each other. I mean, it literally was a rap battle.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
That is so like, I feel like that would be a dandy in like Victorian England.
Sure,
would do
yeah.
that. Not,
yeah.
not someone else.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, young, yeah, we're basically doing that. We're just speaking English and saying
And we're just not very good at it.
Yeah, we're just really bad. This
all
is our
of
first
our insults
try.
Go over each other's heads.
No, the crowd doesn't get it. We don't get it. So I know everyone out there is wondering, well, hey, Casey, what was that? What was the premise of that joke? And also, could you quickly go back and describe what the hell you're talking about?
Paternal apomixis.
Yes, that is exactly right.
Is it A as in like opposite?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Or so, anti, whatever?
Precisely. Okay. So apomixis, or pomixis, I guess, if you take that away, is essentially apomixis is the idea, rather the biological phenomenon where the sex cells, the gametes, are instead of pollinating and getting together, where you have the ova or ovule, which is the female sex gamete, and the male sex gamete, which is the pollen.
We're talking like sperm and egg, basically.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Sperm and egg, pollen, ovule.
Okay.
Those two things in plants, at least.
And gamete,
it's the bigger term for all of them.
Oh, gamete is just any sex cell, like a sperm or an egg.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
That is, so that's the male gamete and the female gamete, essentially.
Okay.
Yes. Don't worry. We're not going to get any further into that this episode.
Oh, I'm having flashbacks to like sophomore year of high school.
Yeah, right. Everyone is.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll cover that in another time in far more detail.
Casey will do it by himself.
Exactly. That'll just be me talking to me, and it's going to be great. Everyone's going to be like, well, this is a really boring show, but Alex, thanks, Casey.
Alex playing Zelda in the background.
Casey, that's really interesting.
Thanks, playing Alex. Snake on my phone. Just like sophomore year.
That is how, yeah, exactly. That it'll be a flashback to literal science class. So what this is, what apomixis is.
Yeah.
Is, you have, instead of both of those sex cells, the female and the male gamete, coming together,
okay,
what they do is those are created by meiosis. Mm. Now, by meiosis means that you take a diploid cell, which has two sets of chromosomes.
Okay.
Normally, what happens is those in mitosis, they split, and then a second pair of chromosomes gets added on, and then the two cells split entirely, and you have a perfect copy of each individual cell, both with complete amounts of chromosomes.
And then that happens like a billion more times.
And then you get Alex Croson.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
That is the classic, you now have a fertilized egg and it goes bloop, 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 and becomes an embryo. Then it becomes a little thing. Whether that's a seed or an animal or whatever.
So that's like the template. And then they like customize the cells to be like, you're going to be a tongue cell.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to be a blood.
You're going to do this and you're going to do that. And I'm going to put you over here and you're going to be organized like that. And all that system is done by the DNA.
But first, you got to like copy and paste 100 times.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, before those two things are together, those sets of chromosomes in the diploid or diploid cell, which just means two ploids. So they have two sets of chromosomes.
And a ploid is?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't even ask that question.
Oh, geez.
I'm not even going to go down there because I don't technically have an answer because it's all this like intense, like cellular sexual reproduction kind of talk.
I mean, yeah. Once you introduce that many sort of terms, each term introduces another couple terms.
Yes.
It is like meiosis in itself.
It is. And your brain splits in half. Well, so the mitosis is when you get those two complete cells.
Okay, got it.
Meiosis, uh-huh, as opposed to mitosis.
No T.
Exactly. Meiosis is when they split, but they don't add a second reproduction. So now you have two haploids. The haploids only have half the chromosomes. That is a sex cell. If you then, those are the sex cells, so then you have one, the pollen, goes and finds its ovule, and then gets together. The ovule has done the same thing. They take their two halves and put them together for a whole, and now you have a fertilized embryo that then becomes a seed, and now you have a third genetically distinct individual from the two parents with half the DNA of each.
I think I got it.
Excellent. Now, the tree.
Oh, there's more? Fuck.
Oh, no, no, no. Yes. So now that we have built this foundation, we're going to build our house on top of it.
Can I just say really quickly, Casey?
Yeah.
Mitosis and meiosis.
Yeah.
Meiosis is just like mitosis, but like the Boston version.
You're so right, man.
Because there's no T.
Is this like the tea party
yes,
thing?
Yeah, they threw it all in the harbor.
Exactly. So all this is just, I was wondering if this was an accent thing or if this was a callback to that. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
It's the Boston version of mitosis.
My heart is racing from how poorly that flopped.
No, 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 that did not flop. That was like a graceful duck landing into a perfectly still stream.
I note that it's not a swan. It's still a duck.
it's still a waterfowl.
But it did
fowl,
land
okay?
really beautifully.
It did look nice.
All right.
Okay, so apomixis is when instead of them coming together and fertilizing, and this is a general thing, I did so much research into this. I am not a geneticist, nor am I someone who's doing a whole shit ton of research. So this is going to be the Casey Clapp arbitrary version.
Love it.
They get together, and apomixis is when instead of having those two things come together, one of them just does it all themselves. So let's say the female gamete just puts itself back together essentially and splits internally.
Wow.
And then brings itself back together. And then you get 100% clonal DNA creating a viable seed of the maternal mother or the maternal organism.
100% DNA from the maternal gamete.
Exactly. So it makes a viable seed from a viable embryo from only the DNA of one side.
So this would, to humanize it, yeah. This would be as if a woman with a womb and ovaries could like pass an egg into her womb.
Yes.
And into her uterus
uh-huh.
and just like start growing a baby all on her own.
Exactly. I believe in animals, it's called parthenogenesis.
That is science fiction.
It is. Now, Alex, there is this, that's very common in like the rose family,
is
in
really?
Poaceae, the grass family. Yeah. It's like dandelions do this. Rowan trees do it.
Wow.
It's not uncommon.
So they don't need to pollinate.
They don't need to pollinate.
Okay.
Now it's better if they do, because they get this new influx of genes and they can get new adaptations.
Holy
and
shit.
It could potentially make them better at whatever the thing is that they're doing.
Interesting.
However, there has been, at least at the time, only one instance that they found in the entire plant kingdom of this happening on the paternal side.
What? Don't tell me.
I'm not going to say anything.
We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
Casey, is this one example
yes.
of a paternal asexual reproduction in the Sahara cypress?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Now, they have found it in a couple different plants since this initially came out, because all these very first articles, I think it was like 2000, 2001 when they very first came out.
Okay.
They've since found it in a couple other different plants. I think maybe about 30 or so. Well, I think 30 or so do the maternal. Very few do the paternal.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes that very curious for what we're talking about is that our tree is the only conifer, the only gymnosperm that does this at all. There's not a single other one. Not another cypress, not another pine, not another cycad, nothing.
And how many conifers are there? 400 and some?
There are 611, 630, something like that.
Okay.
Conifers. And then there are like gymnosperms as a larger group that includes like the ginkgos and the cycads, a couple other weird, witchii, weird plants.
Okay.
There's probably a couple thousand total.
Okay. Damn.
So, yeah. This is the only one, Alex.
Wow.
And here's how it works. Are you ready for this?
I think so, Casey.
Okay. So pollen from tree A comes over, and this pollen is the male gamete, so we're going to call this the paternal parent, the paternal provider here of the pollen. Pollen floats over to cone B from tree B. It finds the ovule of tree B, which is the maternal tree. The pollen lands on and fuses with this ovule,
mm-hmm.
but it does not fuse the DNA. It kicks out the nucleus of the maternal part and then just starts reproducing itself with only the paternal DNA.
Whoa.
Now, if you remember, seeds are basically the seed germ, which is the embryo attached to a lunchbox filled with nutrients and food.
Mm-hmm.
The paternal part, the pollen, starts to reproduce itself and starts to be the embryo. So it essentially just internally splits and then becomes diploid, which is a fertile part. Remember we said earlier that there's only 10% of the
of
tree
the
that does this.
Of
the
seeds are fertile, yeah.
Yeah, it's because this tree kind of is just fucked up. Like, it has had so much inbreeding where it doesn't always just reproduce properly and create these diploid cells. Oh. Sometimes it has triploid, sometimes it has more or less, sometimes it's haploid, sometimes it's got none at all. So the trees have been inbreeding and it's been causing them trouble.
As it does.
So now, they send their pollen over, they fertilize, or they don't fertilize. That's the thing. They don't actually fertilize the egg. They kick the other nucleus out. They reproduce themselves, but they use the maternal tree to continue growing the seed.
Oh!
To continue growing the fruit. So you go to this tree B, which would be the maternal tree, and you take the seed out of the cone, and you go and you test the DNA of the seed germ that is paternal DNA. The tree that then pops up from this seed is identical in terms of DNA and extremely similar in terms of the morphology of the plant to the paternal parent.
Wow.
The maternal parent, though, provides all those nutrients, provides the lunchbox that is inside the seed called the endosperm. It's the big stuff like what we eat. You get a walnut, that's mostly endosperm. That's just the food that the germ is eating.
The nut material?
Exactly. It's like there's the...
the pack lunch.
Exactly. It's pack lunch for the embryo to eat.
Okay.
So...
Wow.
The mother is literally, and I don't mean this in any figurative sense, it's a surrogate for a clone of the paternal parent.
That is wild, Casey.
Bah!
And you know what? I followed you through that whole thing.
Yeah!
I understand it fully.
I'm so happy to hear it because this is like such a mind-blowing thing.
Holy shit.
It's crazy.
Now this, like you said, this is very rare.
This is so rare. This is the only gymnosperm to do it, the only conifer to do it.
And one out of a handful of plants, animals, or...
Yes.
I guess that's all there is.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's very, very rare.
Wow, that's incredible, Casey. So yeah. I'm going to recap.
Okay.
Little sperm pollen.
Yep.
Through wind pollination, although not so much anymore.
Yep.
Lands on the receptacle of the essentially like the flower part, the receptacle of the female plant.
Yes.
That usually in plants would say, thank you, pollen.
Yep.
Let's use our DNA to create a third party.
Exactly. Those two gametes come together.
Yes. But here, that sneaky little pollen molecule gets in there and says, oh, you know what, I think I live here now,
I'm just gonna do this myself,
I'm gonna take care of this by myself. Kicks the maternal DNA out,
yep,
but uses all of her resources,
exactly,
and grows a this is the most narcissistic process I've ever heard.
It is.
Wow.
So here's the thing. Just to add one other layer onto this.
Please.
It will also do this to the Italian, or what most people call the Mediterranean cypress.
Oh, wow.
So these are two different species. And they did a study where they had a controlled crossbreeding of a paternal Caprese duprezii. And they pollinated and then grew 15 trees that were Caprese sempervirens,
mm-hmm.
the Italian or Mediterranean cypress. They then waited 15 years, or I think 6 years maybe, and then they looked at the trees and they compared the DNA and all these morphological different parts. And I will tell you what they found. They looked at the orientation of the twigs, the percentage of filled seeds, meaning seeds that are inside that actually have some amount of viable germ in them.
Okay.
They looked at the pollen ploidy levels, whatever that means. I guess they're diploid in Duprezia. They looked at all these different morphological traits. They were all identical to the male tree.
Wow.
Which was Duprezia.
A different species.
Then they looked at the DNA identical to the paternal tree.
Holy shit.
Which is the one that did the pollen. The pollen, even in this other species, will do the same thing. It will paternally use its own DNA to clone itself in the surrogate of either species that is very closely related or in its own species.
This is how you take over the world, Casey.
This is exactly how you take over the world.
Spooky.
Now, so here's my question. This is the thing that I had to kind of think about.
It's also not working. There's 200 of them left.
Exactly. But Alex, why are they doing it? Everyone is kind of wondering this. They're saying, okay, why is this? But we'll have to save that for later, because here's my question. Without wondering why, let's just talk about, okay, is this a thing that the trees are doing against the will of the other tree or with the will of the other tree?
Interesting.
So our lovely fungal associate, I'm going to assume she's a fungal associate, Suzanne Simard.
Oh, obviously.
Obviously, duh. Suzanne Simard has really been a pioneer explaining that trees do not work always in competition. They work in collaboration with each other.
That's right.
So without adding too much anthropomorphizing onto this, which forgive me if there is, which there is, is this a takeover by the Sahara cypress?
Wow.
Is this tree essentially found itself in this weird situation where it's just 100% inbreeding, and it has evolved this ability to clone itself in other trees because of two things. One, it is in dire straits. So it kind of takes on this, this approach of, well, everything is working really badly right now. So the DNA essentially malfunctions and just keeps on repeating itself. And so it kind of goes in, does everything normal, but then kind of short circuits and then just starts doing it all itself.
Whoa.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And then, like, I don't know, it's almost like a virus where it goes in there, affects what the normal DNA should do, and then uses this whole thing almost like a gall or something.
I imagine it more like a cancer.
Yes, exactly. But it doesn't grow out of the ordinary. It doesn't do anything wrong. It just kind of circumvents the normal stuff and uses it for its own benefit.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, like, a cancer causes problems, right? Like, it ends up, like, throwing everything off, which is, again, it's not analogous necessarily to how trees function, but your point is very well taken. A virus also does the same thing. It puts its own DNA into something and then changes how something works so that it reproduces more virus.
Right.
So this is kind of doing the same thing, but it doesn't, like, do it in a malicious way, which is, it's like, I can't quite put my, I guess I'm uncomfortable saying this tree is maliciously just cloning itself.
Yeah.
But here's the opposite. What if it's a partnership? What if the kick out narrative that we just used is the wrong way to look at it?
Yeah.
What if the Mediterranean cypress is more like, you are in dire straits and there is some chemical thing going on at this very, very base biological level where this tree has inbred itself to the point where it has now evolved this special function. This special function is somehow communicated to the other tree and the other tree's like, oh yeah, you're about to die out. Why don't I be your surrogate?
Yeah.
And I will recreate your seed.
Yeah, you can crash at my place.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on hard times.
Wait till you get back on your feet.
Yeah.
I think
I kind of like that.
It's not a bad way to look at it. I mean, if we're going to be looking at these in these kind of pseudo 100% reasons, maybe.
So you're kind of proposing, and I'm extrapolating off of your point, that this is not even really reproduction. This is like an SOS. Like,
yes,
we're sending our escape pods with our civilians.
Yes.
They might land on your planet. Please take care of them.
They're going to be clones of us. We're going to fucking die right here.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
I kind of do too.
That approach to this idea, Casey.
And then, like, it seems like almost that they would get them back on their feet. Like, imagine somehow this pollen lands in this other closely related species that has this way better habitat.
Uh-huh.
Then that tree then creates seeds. The new additional species, now you have two species growing right next to each other. They're now working together to rehab that species.
Wow.
I don't know.
I have a third option.
What's yours?
That this is a living fossil.
Oh.
And we just haven't found any proof of it.
Oh.
And so that this whole process comes from, you know, a time out of time.
Yeah.
And that this is just how it used to do things and how it continues to do things, but it's the only one on Earth.
It's the only one on Earth that continues to do it.
That's the big smoking gun. Maybe not the opposite of a smoking gun. The one piece of evidence you find that's like...
Yeah, like this changes everything.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Oh shit. But what about the red dress? Yeah.
I think you might be onto something. I don't know. And I know there are people that are like looking into this.
Sure.
But honestly, the one,
I love the idea of like these, they're just Googling it.
Yeah.
They're just looking into
maybe,
it.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, but unfortunately, I guess I don't want to say unfortunately, but like the one article that I found, a great scientific article by the guys who like initially found this and like proposed it and then did the research and said, yeah, this is happening. We're pretty sure this is the first time anyone has ever noticed this in any plant ever before they found it in some others. But here's the thing. They basically like, this could be a really important thing to study for seedless or fruitless varieties of this tree. So they note specifically, if we can kind of work with this, then we could maybe help get a tree to reproduce, but that third reproduction will have no cones at all or no viable seeds or nothing that we need to worry about because it essentially reproduces itself in a way that doesn't produce good viable clones or something.
Yeah.
But they were like, yeah, this could be a good way to, you know, for the cultivars. They could make new varieties of trees that have these certain things. So it's kind of this weird genetic middle ground where they're like, we might be able to use this to our advantage in these other applications. But I'm kind of with you where I'm like, this might be like some weird evolutionary thing that either has been here the whole time that we didn't know about, or that we're now learning about and we're able to say, hold on, if maybe other trees get to this point of having a couple thousand years worth of inbreeding and becoming very, very small, 231 individuals, are they down to the point of inbreeding and stress that they are actually changing how they fundamentally move forward as a evolutionary response to continue themselves?
Interesting.
Like that's a huge, like, holy shit moment. Like,
yeah.
does this plant, like, did it just evolve an entirely novel form of reproduction because it's in such a like dire place right now?
You know what they say, Casey? Nature finds a way. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you, a VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, ah, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. We hope you enjoyed those ads. It's time for our review, Casey.
Which is very exciting. I honestly, Alex, have not even had time to consider a review on this tree.
Wow.
Normally, I kind of think about it a little bit. I've been too...
Yeah.
Too off.
You were in presenter mode.
Yes. And also, like, it's the whole concept of everything is wild. And
yeah.
We should note, if you want to hear more about this, because there's like a whole other half that we had to cut.
Oh, yeah.
Go join the Patreon to hear this extra sort of section of like... Now, there's one more bit where Alex is like, Casey, you do not say there's one more at the end of this. So you're going to have to join the Patreon to hear it. But this is like just one of the most fascinating tree things that I've come across without someone saying, you know, there's this tree that does this thing and that everyone knows about. Oh, it's a living fossil. It's like, okay, great. Yeah, that's the standard thing everyone says about, you know, the ginkgo or the Don Redwood or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is something that... no one has ever brought up to me. I've never heard it.
Wow.
Yet it's one of the most fascinating things.
We got to get on the horn with Radiolab.
We do. Yeah, we got to tell them.
I also want to say that you yourself have done a bit of evolving. You have found a way to compete with my telling you we can't add another 35 minutes. And you're like, what if we make a Patreon?
What if we give this to all the people who we love?
You outcompeted me.
Yes.
And now I must die.
No, just fit a different niche, dude. You're fine.
That's right. Yeah. I got to get into baseball or something. Casey, it's time for our review of the Sahara Cypress. Here's how it works. We're going to get some final thoughts on this wonderful tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. As a resident, I'll say researcher.
Yes, thank you.
We'll begin with you.
All righty. So this little tree... is just kind of very fascinating to me. I think it's beautiful, and I think that, well, I should also note, it's very endangered, like extra super endangered.
I see that it's critically endangered.
Yes, that is the proper term. However, it is not, as one would think, the most rare species of cypress in the world. That would actually go to the Cayumaca cypress,
ooh,
which is Cupressus stevensonii.
Is that a Japanese?
That is not. That actually grows down in outside of San Diego, California, in the state park by the same name, Cayumaca.
Cayumaca, okay.
And here's the thing. There's like I don't know. I shouldn't say like the exact number because I don't know if they have it. Because also it was like burnt up by a big fire a couple years ago.
Shit.
But it's come back because these are like fire adapted trees.
Okay.
But that is the one that they would officially say is the most rare because they grow in an area that's like, it's like, I don't know, maybe a couple square miles. Wow. Like on the one side of this one mountain in this one space.
Woof.
That's where the tree grows.
Damn. And
that is it.
It's just hanging on by a thread, huh?
Yeah. So this is like the next level kind of thing where cypresses just find their way. Like, I don't know if it's because they're so ancient and they're just kind of on their way out, or if the climate is changing and they're just not, you know, they're on their way out because of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But cypresses just always tend to be these like really fascinating trees that have these weird things going on. And I think that's really fascinating. I think that it looks extraordinarily beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And you can apparently buy it and plant it all over the place. Funny enough, it's critically endangered, but it is quite available in the trades if you are looking around to get it. Now, I don't know 100% in the United States if that's the case.
Uh-huh.
Probably if you go a little bit further south where it gets a little bit more dry, you'd probably find more.
Mediterranean.
Exactly. But you can find it on nursery sites all over the place. Hoyt Arboretum has a couple new ones that are being planted in the last couple of years. So they're available and they're out there, which is kind of nice. It's kind of like the Woolamai pine where you can actually find that like often nowadays, even though it used to be so endangered and no one could find it.
So the ones at Hoyt, they don't count toward the 231 specimens.
No, we're only talking about the natural ones that live in their natural habitat.
The native range.
Yes, correct. Okay. So I think I'm going to go with like, I'm going to go 8.3.
That's great.
Yeah, because any tree that can just take it, I think it's just super cool.
Like, yeah.
They also are these cultural phenomenon where, like you were saying, they are named. You said you looked up those names earlier on this little kind of side project we did and recorded. Can you share some of those names?
Oh, sure. I'd love to.
Because I would just love to hear them. And I just think that a tree that is so important, yet it's also, it stands out so specifically that a whole culture and people have named every single one individually. It's like, you know, we name our trees. There's a giant sequoia. There's this tree. There's that tree. But it's not like we have named every single giant sequoia. This is, we've named every single one of these trees, or near enough to where it doesn't matter. But I just think that's the coolest thing. I think they're beautiful. I think we should plant more of them, and I think we should not cut them down. But it is it's a fascinating tree, and I don't know how I feel, Alex. I'm curious what your thoughts are. To its paternal. I think this is the only time that I might be okay with someone referring to trees as being sexist or misogynist, because this tree is actively the male part, as far as, you know, biology is concerned, is just taking over the female as a surrogate and not letting the genes go. But because they are both monoecious, the tree that is the surrogate for the other tree is doing the same thing to the other trees, you know?
Oh, wow. Oh, because sure.
They're both male and female at the same time.
Generational trauma, man.
Exactly. So it's one. It's like, I'm doing this because it was done to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So every tree is a perpetrator and a victim all at the same time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. does that count as an ism if it's just universal in both directions?
Now that's an anti-hero.
There you go.
So here are some names of these individual specimens. Tamarit.
Okay.
Tifatest. Tinharwida.
These, I want to, do you know what these mean? Do they have translations?
No, unfortunately.
Ah, well, good. May it always be so.
Armazar.
Armazar.
Yeah, Armazar is probably my favorite.
That's great.
It sounds like some sort of Armazar, like some sort of warrior.
Yeah, exactly.
Janet.
We were
with a D at the beginning.
Also a warrior. So it's D Janet.
Yeah, D like Django, like Janet.
That's so great.
Yeah.
See, I just think that's so rad. So rad.
I kind of imagine that they're named after either the environmental situation where they are.
The one by the flat rocks.
Right. Or like people.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is just so good.
Casey, what do you think? 8.3
is what I believe. 8.3. Okay. Yeah, 8.3.
I love what I've learned about this tree.
Okay.
I love its sort of lore. I love its really curious way of reproducing itself. I sympathize with it that it's critically endangered. Sometimes I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I like its etymology, Casey.
Yeah.
To rot.
So good, isn't
the
it?
The esophagus and lungs of a grazing animal. That's just so fucking cool.
Yeah. I also love that they specifically say of a grazing animal.
Yeah. Like it's ultimately, right? It's the same as a human's.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I love that about it. I love the unique characteristics it has.
Yeah.
It's sort of all around unique. It almost doesn't even feel like a tree.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I think it's very fair.
Because it shares so little with most trees, right?
A bit of an introvert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's literally one of a kind.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Every single one is one of a kind.
Yes.
You guys got to join Patreon. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. We talked for about, I don't know, 30 minutes about that stuff. Boy, Case, I'm in the 8 range as well. I'm gonna say 8.1.
8.1.
Golden cones of honor.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So you like it?
I do. I feel like there's something I'm missing. I'm misremembering. Like I was gonna bring up, but I can do that later. Hey, that was our review of the Sahara cypress. We hope you enjoyed it. It's time, Casey.
Yes.
For our completely arbitrary Q&A. I have a question.
Okay, what do we got?
This week's question, as every week, is from the Patreon at the $3 Q&A Quercus and Alder tier. This one's from Nick. Nick asks, fall is approaching fast.
Interesting point.
If I'm going camping, what sort of trees' downed limbs should I look for to build the perfect campfire for s'mores? Now, Casey, I chose this question.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually going camping this weekend.
Oh, so this is, hold on. If you rearrange Nick, oh my God, it's just Alex.
I love falsely claiming anagrams. Yeah. It's so funny. So Casey, what do you think?
Yes.
I thought we could dial in here and say, I'm going to be camping on the Oregon coast.
Okay.
Kind of central Oregon coast.
Yes.
And what trees should I be looking for to collect limbs from?
Okay.
Fallen limbs, of course.
Yes. And that is actually, we should make a note. Don't break off living limbs from trees. Even if it doesn't really matter for the tree, you're going to have a poor fire because it's wet wood.
Full of water.
Exactly. It's not going to burn very well.
Even in the middle of summer, a tree is full of water.
As long as it's alive, it sure is. So in the case of the Oregon coast, it is well known by everyone and has been for thousands of years. The Douglas fir makes the best firewood.
Wow. Tell me why.
I don't know why. In terms of like the biology of the tree,
uh-huh.
But in terms of what humans tend to believe is the best fire, it's fire that doesn't have a lot of big pops in it.
Oh.
And it makes low amount of smoke. And it burns very regularly, but also at a high temperature. But not like a giant high temperature, not too low.
So that tells me that it's a pretty dense wood.
Yep.
And it maybe doesn't have a lot of water or sap.
Yeah, well, this would be mostly if you let it season for just a little bit, so let some of the water evaporate out.
Okay.
Maybe over the course of a summer, or you know, most people on big wood would let it sit for a year or two.
Holy shit!
Yeah, well, that's like, you know, giant, like, you know, a couple feet in diameter kind
of
stuff.
You really got to get ahead of your fucking firewood.
You sure do. Or just go out and find a tree that fell a couple years ago, right? And then you're good to go.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So the low popping.
Yeah.
Does the popping come from water bubbles?
A little bit. It's like little bits of sap sometimes, but mm-hmm. It also has to do with how much water is in it, where water gets hot and then becomes steam.
Yeah.
Steam is just essentially water that's expanded, so it puts pressure on it. So as soon as the wood gets burnt enough to where that water vapor can escape, then it pops it out.
Crack.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's that, but then there's also sap that does the same thing. Sap gets really hot, and then if it's inside the wood and it can't get out, soon as that wood burns down just a little bit, then you get this
okay.
kind of thing.
Is sap flammable?
Yes, very much so.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought
so. Terpenes in it.
But I suddenly felt stupid asking.
No, it's a fine thing to ask.
Okay.
So that's really good option. If you don't have that, red alder is another really good option.
Red alder?
Yeah, it burns very, very consistently.
Okay.
And out in the Oregon coast, it is just everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So you can find lots of both of those species, really. Sitka spruce is also a pretty good one. It has less sap, so it doesn't burn quite as hot, quite as easy, because sap actually burns really, really toasty.
Mm.
And then the western red cedar would be fine, but it burns and adds a certain flavor to things.
Ooh.
So, like, you know, salmon, you cook it on a plank,
sure.
kind of adds this kind of woody flavor. So you don't necessarily want that on a s'more. Because it's very like, it's a savory flavor, in my opinion, not a sweet flavor.
You want a neutral or sweet
yes,
kind of wood.
Exactly. But of course, you also just want like the smoky feel to it. Like it's kind of adds to
yeah.
it. So I would say lean away from the western red cedar.
Okay.
Go towards Douglas fir, towards your alder.
Okay.
There's also big leaf maple out there that burns really cleanly and fair. But a lot of times that you'd have to... Get a saw, it's very dense wood once you start getting into it. So sometimes that's not as approachable.
If you've got a question for us, join the Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod, or just search Completely Arbitrary Patreon. You'll find it. We got a bunch of different tiers at a bunch of different price points. Oh, I hate that phrase. If you want to support the podcast, that is the best way to do it. We also have a merch store. If you want some sweet arbitrary swag, arbitrarypod.com/merch. We got some other news coming on that too.
Yes, we sure do.
Of course, the crown jewel of the Patreon, the most popular, I will say by far, is the Cone of the Month Club. Every month, you receive an illustrated conifer cone sticker. Wow, I said that really perfectly, huh?
You did. You nailed it, dude. You nailed it.
We get a different artist every month to illustrate a cone. We put it in an envelope with an info card, and we ship it off to you. And it's a nice little treat. Once a month, you get
really
a
is.
New sticker, and you can build your own cone collection. And you support this podcast that you listen to. If you get to the end of your month and you think, hey, that was worth $10, all that content I got from Completely Arbitrary.
That's right. We would love if you would share it with us however much you want.
That's right. Consider signing up. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
What a lovely episode we've had.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that you said that because I'm having a very good time with it.
Me too.
This is one that I had a lot of fun researching. I have to say, I did like extra research by accident.
Wow.
Because I was just like, this is curious. And
yeah.
usually when we do that, we ended up like splitting things off and doing a couple different things with a couple different trees,
mm-hmm.
but we couldn't do that with this species.
Yeah.
Everything that had to do with it. And they were all connected. So,
I mean, that's very on brand for this tree.
It's
isn't
just
it?
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And for that, a little appendix, also go join the Patreon,
at least
the $5 tier, the Arboretum. That's our bonus episode tier. And with that, we say, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Adieu. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.